You just think they are. Right? What do you think? You have that experience? What?
The problem only in the mind.
Yeah, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam. I think it's by the Avanti Brahman, and he's explaining all the difficulties that exist in the world and all the reasons people give for the difficulties. You know, it's karma, it's this, that, and the next thing. He says, no, it's none of those. It's just the mind. Because the mind is perceiving things in different ways. And just like we're taught in the Bhagavatam to perceive everything as the mercy of Krishna. So the same thing is happening, and you can perceive it as the mercy of Krishna. You can perceive it as Krishna's affection. You could perceive it as a great misfortune. But it's the same thing. It's only how you look at it. Just like I was saying last night, that we had these court cases, and we were being taken to court because our movement was being charged with brainwashing. And at that time, Prabhupada said, we will not lose these court cases. They'll all be thrown out of court. So that changed our perception right away. Right? Oh, we're going to win these cases. It's all Krishna's arrangement. They were reading the Bhagavatam in court. That was the evidence. Because they didn't show that we're brainwashing, so they had to read them. Prabhupada said, read the entire Bhagavatam in court. So we shifted our vision on the situation. Now what we were worried about, we were no longer worried about. The same thing was happening. We saw it. Prabhupada made us realize this was Krishna's arrangement. So it's just how you're looking at something. What was once an obstacle is now an opportunity. Yes?
It seems to me that you make a difference between, like, the obstacle that you're talking right now is a thing that can discourage us, but actually they are not. You take the challenge and you see Krishna. So my question is, what is the difference between this kind of obstacle, which is only because of our perception that we see this as something discouraging, in between a real obstacle, which is like a cleaning an up?
He's asking, what's the difference between an imagined obstacle and an artha? Not much. When you imagine it's an obstacle, it becomes an anartha for you. Prabhupada was asked, why are women so attractive? Why did Krishna make them so attractive? Did I tell you the story before? I could tell you a joke about this, but I might offend the women if I tell the joke. What? Don't tell. But I would end up offending the man. First, the joke offends the women, then it offends the men. So the women get back at the men, so they don't get offended anymore. Why'd you make women so beautiful? Prabhupada said, so attractive. Prabhupada said, they're only attractive because you want to enjoy them. So he's saying, they're not a... For the sadhu, the woman is not an object of enjoyment. But the fact that you're attracted, you think that you see them as attractive because you want to enjoy them. So now it's an anartha, right? But when you see the woman differently, it's not an anartha. So your perception will determine if that anartha... Okay, you can say... every man is attracted to women. But how do you deal with that attraction? Whether it becomes an anartha or not. You see? It's an anartha when you're in material life, it's an anartha. Then you come to Krishna consciousness, how do you deal with it? Do you allow it to remain an anartha, or do you purify it by changing your perception and changing your relationship with the object that is the so-called anartha? Envy, fault-finding, all these things. You come to Krishna consciousness, if you know how to fault-find, if you're really good at fault-finding, that's good. Just find faults with yourself. Then it won't become an anartha for you. Isn't it true that things are attractive only because we want to enjoy them? And isn't it true when you see everything in Krishna's service, they no longer become causes of attachment or attraction for you? You can still be attracted to it, but you see it for Krishna, so it's not, you're not attracted to enjoy it anymore. So then, now you see a beautiful woman, and you can say, hey, she's beautiful, but you're not trying, it's not attracting you to enjoy her. It's just an observation. Wouldn't it be nice if she became a devotee, she could attract so many men to Krishna consciousness? That's how you think. Otherwise, you think, wouldn't it be nice she becomes a devotee, I could marry her. In fact, let me go preach to her and make her a devotee so I can marry her. And that's happened before. Not that that was their motive, but it ended up that way. Prabhupada said another interesting thing. He said, anything you offer to Krishna, it has to be spiritual to offer it. You can't offer Krishna something material. What does that mean? You say, well, look at, I'm offering flowers, I'm offering fruits, so many things, it's material. Prabhupada said, no. If you see that flower, that fruit, for Krishna's enjoyment, it's spiritual. Then you can offer it. And if you see it materially, you can't, it's not suitable to be offered because you've separated from Krishna. Does that make sense? It's interesting, isn't it? Defining material and spiritual as in relation to Krishna or not. And then Prabhupada saying, you can't offer it if it's material because you're not seeing it for Krishna. It's not offerable. Isn't that interesting? Yes.
So I can't offer anything. No, really. What should I do?
Wear blindfolds when you pick your flowers, and close your nose, and then you won't see it and smell it. And what you should do is learn to see it as for Krishna's enjoyment. Until?
So how can I offer? If it's not offerable.
What to do? You have to offer it anyway. That's your duty. But you have to learn how to offer it. Right consciousness. You practice. All we're trying to do in spiritual life is put Krishna in the center and get out of the center as fast as we can. Because we're stuck in the center. Material consciousness means we're stuck in the center. Right? Everything in the universe is meant for my enjoyment. That's there in the Gita. So much do I have now, so much more will I get. We're in the center. So spiritual life means we get out. We trade places with Krishna. We're not used to that. It takes time. How do we think? I like this, I like that, I don't like this, I don't like that. We're so conditioned to be in the center. The whole universe revolves around what we like and what we don't like. We move according to what we like and we don't like. And that's our problem. Pure devotee moves according to what Krishna likes and doesn't like. a very interesting way to live. Like if you look at Prabhupada, in the 40s or 50s he wrote a letter, and in the letter he said, my desire is to see everyone in the world Krishna conscious. So that reveals his heart. That reveals his motive. It reveals how he saw the world. He wanted to make everyone Krishna conscious. So in that consciousness, he was never thinking about what he likes and what he doesn't like. So we're meant to come to that consciousness. And that's when you really that's when you're really happy. You're not thinking of yourself anymore. There's one time Prabhupada was invited to an engagement at the last moment. And it was a television program. I think it was going to start at midnight. He had to drive very far. And so he's going to come back like 2 in the morning. And I said, Prabhupada, there's 1 million people watching the show, but it's inconvenient because the show doesn't start till midnight. And Prabhupada said, if I consider my convenience, how can I preach? So then in the early days of the movement, this was probably 1970 or 71, the devotees who were traveling, or at least one of the devotees who was traveling with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was in India at that time, would every month send news on Prabhupada, and he would write down things Prabhupada said. So this one time we got a letter, and he said, Prabhupada said, if any devotee will go anywhere to spread Krishna consciousness and not consider how he will live, how will I eat and where will I sleep, I'll take the dust from his feet and put it on my head. So he was training us that that's the mood and the heart of the devotee. He goes out. How will I live? I don't know. Where will I sleep? I don't know. How will I eat? I don't know. But so we're coming from the world of me, 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 me. I like this, I don't like this. And we're trying to come to the world of giving others Krishna. So that way you see Krishna in their heart, and you see them in relation to Krishna. And you it's such a nice consciousness, because everywhere you go you think, how could I use this for Krishna? How could I engage this person in Krishna's service? So everything's using for Krishna. That's your natural position. Then you're happy. When you walk by a bakery, what do you think? Especially when you smell. What do you think? Oh, that looks good, that looks good. I'd like to eat this, I'd like, especially if you're hungry. We're so conditioned. Me, me, me. I want, I like. It's deeply rooted. I was in Mayapur, I heard a story that really touched me in a very positive way. Niranjan Swami was explaining, it was on the Vyas Puja ceremony of Gaur Govinda Maharaj, and he was glorifying Gaur Govinda Maharaj, and he was saying that there was a GBC meeting, and in the GBC meeting, the GBC were asked a question. The question was, how do you define the guru, or what is a guru, what does a guru do? And Gaur Govinda Maharaj said, and he was just revealing his own heart and mind, he said, a guru is one who wants to give Krishna to everybody. And if you meditate on that, it's so deep. That means he sees himself, his duty, his world, as just he exists to give Krishna to everyone he can. That's it. He doesn't exist to get a nicer car, a nicer house, more friends, more followers. He just exists to give Krishna to others. So that's the ultimate. And naturally, if you exist on that level, that you want to bring everyone to Krishna, then you'll also naturally see everything else for Krishna. You know, it all goes to Krishna. And it's actually a huge austerity. Because when you do that, Krishna gives you so much. And he gives you so much, and you have to... You can't enjoy any of it, you have to give it. I'll tell you something really funny to illustrate this point. I went to, it was in Delhi, And in the Delhi temple, they have a gift shop and they have speakers outside and they often play my CDs. So some devotees said, "Mahatma, you know in India you're famous." And I said, "What's the use of being famous if you can't enjoy the fame?" And I said, "I'm a devotee, I can't enjoy the fame." Because you want to be famous to enjoy it, right? I mean, it's enjoyable. Everybody likes you, everybody knows you. So it's like that. It's like, as a devotee, you're engaging everything in Krishna's service, and then Krishna often gives you more things to engage, but you can't enjoy them because they're all for him. So you have to be very detached. It's like you're hungry and someone gives you a plate of prasadam and you're not allowed to eat it, but you smell it. Smells good, you want to eat it. So I was smelling the fame, I wanted to eat it, but I couldn't. Because that is not how a devotee thinks. But it was that Krishna was revealing to me how much I wanted to enjoy the fame. And I couldn't enjoy it. It was a very weird realization I was having. Because fame is about as high as it gets. I mean, fame is better than money. These millionaire, billionaire people, you know, they go after they get their billions and millions, then they go after the fame, because it's much higher. So Krishna was like giving me a taste. He said, "You're famous. Why don't you, bask in the fame?" I was thinking, what's the use? I can't enjoy it. I want to enjoy it, but I can't. So that's the detachment we have to have. But Krishna made me realize how deeply rooted that desire for fame is. So we have to preach Krishna consciousness, then Krishna may give us things that we're very attached to, and we have to be renounced. It's not easy. Is it? Krishna may give you glory, honor. It's considered a possible anartha. There's positive and negative anarthas, and this is one of the positive possible anarthas. The things that come from bhakti can be an anartha. I'll tell you something confidential, and it will help explain this. I was asked several years ago by one lady, totally caught me off guard. She said, "I want to take initiation from you." And she's very insistent. I said, "Okay, I'll think about it." I did one of those Gorkhashore Das Babaji things. "Come back later. I'll ask Mahaprabhu." That type of thing, you know. So she came back later. I said, "Oh, I forgot it." That's what he said. I forgot to ask him. Bhaktisiddhanta came back. "Did you ask him?" "Oh, I forgot." "Did you see him?" "Yeah, but I forgot to ask him." So I didn't really want to do the service for different reasons. And she kept asking. Kept asking. You know, one of those, "I'm not going to take initiation from anybody else." So, you know, it's like, so at some point, I had to go through a process. I had reasons that I didn't want to do it. But I ultimately realized the main reason was I had to become more detached to do it. Sounds awkward, sounds weird, right? But I actually had to become more detached, because by doing it, I'm going to have followers who are going to offer me more respect than most people do. So I realized I was attached to not doing it. And because I wasn't detached enough to be able to deal with it all. And when I detached myself more, I said, "Yes, okay, I'll do it." It's interesting, huh? Because people from the outside might say, you're more attached, that's why you're doing it. You want all that. But, okay, then this is so funny. So I'm in Vrindavan, and this lady, she lives in Vrindavan. She's like 52. But Indians, when they're 52, they age faster than Westerners. I don't know why. By the time they're 52, you know, their grandparents, and just they think they're older. And maybe their diet or whatever. So she's not, you know, I'm 62, and I'm like, can run circles around her. So I'm going here and there, you know, with the devotees, and she wants to lift my suitcase. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to make a 52-year-old weak woman lift my suitcase. No, Gurudev, I want to lift your suitcase. I'm like, you know, I've got like women slaves now, you know, lifting my suitcase. You know. So the same thing happened when I was coming to Israel. I stayed at a devotee's home who wants me to be her guru. And she and her husband took me to the airport, and she wanted to carry my bag. And it probably weighed like 15 kilos, you know. I was like, I don't want you to carry my bag. No, Gurudev, let me carry your bag. And I'm telling her, I'm saying, a devotee, he wants to serve the other devotees, and he wants to glorify the other devotees. And when you become guru, everybody wants to serve you and glorify you. It's like, it's the total opposite. Weren't you saying that Gurudev didn't like Israel because everybody carried his bags? Are you saying that?
A
Burijan didn't.
And he offered him to come to me, and I said, I can come and I paid it, and I'm carrying my chair somewhere
and
go.
He doesn't want to take all the service, right? Yeah. So it's like you're taking a position where you have to allow people to serve you and glorify you, which is really the exact opposite of how a devotee thinks. Because a devotee wants to serve and glorify. So you have to become more detached. Interesting, right? You know, I don't know if I told you this last time. Maybe you can tell me. Did you know that Bhaktisiddhanta said a Vaishnava can't become a guru? Did I tell you that? No? Bhaktisiddhanta said a Vaishnava cannot become a guru. Told you. He said, because the quality of a Vaishnava is he never finds fault with another devotee. But the service of the guru is he has to find fault. So you have this contradiction. So a Vaishnava can't become a guru because he'll find fault. That makes him a non-Vaishnava. So Prabhupada used to say, you know, he would chastise the devotees. He'd say, look at me. All you do is serve me all day, hand and foot, and I just chastise you. He would joke like that. He said, what can I do? It's my duty. It's my service. So that's the service of the guru. That's how he serves his disciple, by chastising. So it's a very detached position when you become a leader. And you can't do it unless you're detached. And people say, no, he's doing it because he's attached. No, he could only do it if he's detached. Right? That the more detached you are, the more Krishna will give you. You know, in the early days of the movement, we didn't have much. So we were all thinking, well, Lord Chaitanya said this movement's going to go around the world. Prabhupada said it also. So we were thinking, that why doesn't Krishna give us the world? So a devotee asked Prabhupada that. He said, Prabhupada, why isn't Krishna giving us the world? Who knows what Prabhupada said? What? Yeah, Krishna could give you the whole world, but what would you do with it? You'd simply sleep. you know, business is finished, we have the whole world, now we can go to sleep. Because we're not ready for it. So as we become ready, then Krishna can give it, give more. Right? Yes.
Anarthas are many times subtle, and you think that you are doing all right, but it's growing. You want to be the best subtly.
How? You want to be the best one?
You want you are a guru or you are a big position, and then your mentality is how to serve. You want, you think, but there are many times subtle things, and after some time it can bring you down because you don't see
your motives.
Your motives. So how best to be on guard? How best not to be attentive, not to uproot it in time?
So he's saying how best to be on guard? You mean to be aware that the anartha is there because you may not know it? One time Prabhupada was speaking to the devotees, and he said, I don't know the beginning of the sentence, but the end of the sentence was, we should have no personal ambition. And so, anarthas are related to personal ambition, and pure bhakti is related to pure motivation. So you want to look at your motivation. Because Rupa Goswami defines pure devotional service as pure motivation, not motivated. You may have material desires, but your service is not motivated by those desires. So why are you doing this? You know, in the early days of the movement, if you were the number one book distributor, you would get the maha plate. So why do you think a lot of devotees wanted to be number one? That's why.
They wanted the mercy.
They wanted the mercy. Yes, they definitely wanted the mercy. So one devotee used to be on welfare. He would take all his welfare money and buy books, then he would distribute. So he'd be the biggest book distributor. And he'd get the maha. You know, that was his thing, was he'd get the maha. Like we were telling that story last night, and Prabhupada said, don't try to become famous, make Krishna famous. So it's about motive. One time Prabhupada said, when you're doing Sankirtan, Harinam Sankirtan, he said, don't chant to attract a crowd or please a crowd, but chant to please Krishna, and Krishna will send sincere people. So it's all about why you're doing it. If you want to help somebody, and you're giving a class, or you're giving them a book, or you're counseling, or just meeting them on the street. Prabhupada said, if they feel that you are their friend, they'll take the book. They'll be open. So how is it that they're going to feel that you're their friend unless you feel as a friend to them? So with that motive, so much is communicated to other people. They feel, well, this person has my interest in mind. Right? Prabhupada said that. He said, if they feel you're their friend, they'll take a book. They feel the genuineness. That many, many times, Prabhupada said, he said, there's no movement in the world that has our standard of purity. He said, so keep the standard and you'll be successful. When I joined the movement, the reason I joined is because there was no standard of purity like there was in the Hare Krishna movement, and I was attracted to that. And I know there's nowhere else I'm going to go where I'll find this level of purity. Do you feel like that? You knew that, you know, this is it. There's nobody, there's nothing like this. Now, Prabhupada made that point. Keep the standard of purity. And he would give the example. There's a sweet shop in Bengal or Calcutta somewhere. And they have the finest sweets. They only use pure milk, pure ghee. And Prabhupada said, this is the most popular sweet shop because it's pure. So you have the pure thing, you'll be successful. So what's the pure thing? It's the pure motive. It's not how well you do it externally, but it's what's, why are you doing it? To show off? To get back at somebody? So funny. We're having a forgiveness workshop, and one of the things we do in the workshop is we ask the participants, what benefit do you get from resentment, and what does it cost you? Well, I get to be right. I get to be a martyr. I get excuses for my failures. These are the benefits. And what does it cost you? So one devotee said, it cost me my japa. I said, how was that? He said, because while I'm chanting, I'm thinking of a person I don't like. And with every round, I get more intense in my hatred and animosity towards them. So it cost me my japa. That's funny, huh? You're chanting the holy name and you're becoming more and more disturbed. Any of you ever experienced that? I'm right, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I'm really right, Hare wrong. They're wrong, Hare Krishna. They're really wrong, Hare wrong. By the time you get the 16th round, you're really convinced, you're totally convinced you're right and completely convinced they're wrong. So then we'd have to ask the question, were you actually chanting, or were you annihilating somebody for the last 2 hours? Isn't it? It's interesting. But I mean, I think it's happened probably to all of us at some time. It's about motive. Why are you doing it? Do you realize, you won't realize this until you come to my humility workshop and we ask you these questions, but I'll give you a hint. Many, many things that we do to attract attention, other people's praise and appreciation. Not to attract the mercy and pleasure of Buddha and Krishna. Oh, that might be there also. Maybe sometimes it's both. When you start to think about it, it gets pretty scary. Because you start to realize many, many things that you and I do, we do to get people's attention. To us. Hey, look at, you like this kirtan? Pretty cool, huh? I wore my best kirtan. I want to attract attention. Maybe one of you will come up and say, that's a nice kirtan. And that was, you know, that was a successful evening. I attracted attention. I'll say something funny in class and go, that was a really good class. Oh, I'm satisfied. Attracted your attention. So the irony is that as devotees, we're trying to put our attention on Krishna and get everyone else to do that. We're not supposed to be trying to get everyone's attention to us, are we? But you just think how many times we do things with a motive to attract attention. That was really good. I'll get some appreciation. I'll get a pat on the back. I'll get honored. Maybe I'll get a plaque. A plaque. You're the best. You're the best devotee in Harish. Signed. Rasha Bhanavi Devi Das. Certified. Oh, you give it to yourself? It's actually scary to think about it, because you realize how much of what you do is motivated by some desire there to get some appreciation or honor from somebody else. Now, I have something else to say. Don't give up, don't get depressed, don't get discouraged. This is normal. It's just the package you inherit when you get, you know, it's all the past accumulated karma and samskara. So you're just moving on and it's there, and, you know, you're becoming aware of it. See, from Bhakti Siddhanta's point of view, he would feel a great fortune if someone came to him and criticized him, pointed out a fault. I think that's very good. You are so puffed up, you just want other people's attention. Thank you, Prabhu, for pointing that out. He'd feel like, that's mercy. Someone has pointed out a fault. And if someone points out a fault, often what do? Well, you're not so good yourself. Who are you to tell me? You ever say that? You don't know what you're talking about. Be quiet. So, but anyway, my point is, don't be discouraged. It's just something we have to deal with. That's all. Right? Something we brought in a long time ago, and we're still working on it. I was once doing a class, we're doing a japa workshop for the second generation. We were on traveling, we're traveling on the youth festival tour. We visit different places with the youth. I was just on part of the tour. So as part of the tour, we were doing a japa workshop for a week. And I told them, I said, you took birth as devotees because you didn't finish out your business. They all know that. I said, now you're facing challenges in your spiritual life, and here we're talking about the challenges you face in your japa. If you don't deal with it, it's not going to go away. You're going to be on the bus tour in 2072 hearing the same class about japa because you didn't do it in the last life. So whenever you see an anartha within you, all you have to think is, okay, I haven't fully dealt with it in the past. I might as well deal with it now. So in the japa workshops, when someone would raise their hand, say, Sachinandan Swami, and this comes up on after the 64 round day, yesterday I saw so many anarthas come up. He would say, congratulations, the process is working. You're seeing them. Did you know that they were there before you saw them? They're already there. Don't get discouraged. You just saw them. That's good. You're making advancement. But we shouldn't get discouraged when we see them. We should just know we're making advancement because we're aware of them. And then you can... If you're aware, you're motivated by the desire to be honored or appreciated, then you can do something, right? You're not aware, you just keep doing it, and you don't know it. Everyone else knows it, everybody else can see it. Now look at him, he's puffed up. But you may not be able to see it. So if you can see it, you're fortunate. Right? Okay, so we're supposed to stop 10 minutes ago, otherwise I might get fired from my position here. If you have any questions, you can ask after class, but I have to officially end the class so I don't get in trouble. Okay? Guna Avatar. You can override. She can override him.
Not
okay.
Here.
Okay. He told me to end at 8:30. So we're going to override him. And that's just been recorded here. Gunavatar Vashabhanavi has overridden your decision. You take it up with her later. In our humility course, I don't know if we did this exercise here. Did we do this exercise? And say, what do you want people to believe about you? Did we do that exercise? Yeah, so it's just, yeah. The ego of the conditioned soul is an attention-grabbing mechanism. It wants to pull attention to itself. And a devotee wants to pull attention to Krishna. So if we're trying to pull attention to ourselves, guess what? We're not thinking of Krishna, are we? Because the attention's on ourselves. That is what you call a duh moment, when you realize that. If you want attention on yourself, it's not going to Krishna. Your consciousness is on you. So, any questions, comments, objections, clarifications? Yes.
So, I'm not understanding there are obstacles there.
The what? What? I don't understand what you're saying.
Are there obstacles or not?
Are there obstacles or not? Only you. You're the only obstacle. Because even if there is an obstacle, how you deal with it will determine if it's an obstacle for you. If you want to be Krishna conscious, you don't want to give in to obstacles, do you? You all know when you want something, obstacles are not obstacles. You ever want ice cream? If you really want it, you'll find it. Any time of the day or night, if you want it, you'll find it. Nothing will be an obstacle. You'll get to the store and you'll get it. Right? We eat every day. Sometimes there's obstacles to overcome to eat, but we don't think they're obstacles. Do you ever think, I have so many obstacles to eat lunch today? We don't think that way. But sometimes there are obstacles. You have to, you know, there's nothing in the fridge. You have to drive and get something. And around here, you have to go, what, like 10 kilometers to the closest store? It's not easy. But you don't think so many obstacles. You just think, I'm hungry. That's what you're focused on, isn't it? You're focused on your hunger. So you don't calculate them to be obstacles. Too many obstacles. I'm not going to eat today. That's why he's so skinny. Too much trouble to eat. Too much trouble to cook, clean the pots. I just won't eat. I think like that sometimes. When my wife travels, I eat like a bird. It's like too much trouble to cook. She said, what did you eat while I was gone? Bananas, lettuce, tomatoes, grapes, something, whatever was left over. But generally, for most people, they like to eat nicely, and they don't look at the process of shopping and cooking as an obstacle. Just look at this is what you do to get it. So, you know, when you want to be Krishna conscious, so-called obstacles, you realize these are just things I have to deal with to get Krishna, and I want Krishna, so I deal with them. I have to deal with my ego, so okay, I'll deal with it. I want Krishna, so I'm going to deal with it. Right? There's devotees that write me a letter and they say, chastise me. Tell me what's wrong with me. Doesn't bother them. They don't see it as a problem. They just see it as something that helps them get to Krishna. So it's not. It's not a difficulty for them. The more you want Krishna consciousness, then the less you see these things as obstacles. You just see them as part of the process. It's what you do to get it. You go shopping, you cut the vegetables, you put them in a pot, you turn the heat on, put in the spices. It's not an obstacle, it's just what you do. Right? Yes? Da?
Da.
Da ilin yet. Da ilin yet. Yes or no? Da, yes, can. That's the extent of my Russian. Da ilin yet. Anything else? Yes.
Presenting ourselves in a positive way, people will be somewhat attracted to Krishna consciousness to the degree that we can be Krishna consciousness. My question is...
to the degree that you can represent?
In terms of attracting attention to oneself.
Oh, attracting attention to oneself. So you want to attract attention to you because you're a devotee, and then they'll get inspired, yeah. Okay. Something like that?
Yeah, not really, but to the extent that I can
help them.
Krishna or be connected to Krishna consciousness to because sometimes you cannot present Krishna.
So you want to be attractive to other people who will then become attracted to you and ask you why you're so attractive. And then you can tell them because I lift weights. No, because because I'm a devotee of Krishna. Whoa. So that's a very good question. He's saying, I want people to be attracted to me because if they're attracted to me, they'll be attracted to Krishna. So how does that relate to the discussion? That's the question.
Yeah,
if that's okay.
If that's valid, or is it the cheating of the mind, or something?
Could be either one. And you know, who can answer the question? You. Each of us has to answer that question. But it's valid, yeah. I think like that a lot. Because one time, I was doing something, and all these people were becoming impatient. And the lady who was organizing this event was getting very frustrated with people. But I was chanting. I was sitting in the car just chanting, so I was happy. I had rounds to chant. We were all lined up, just waiting to move. And when I drove up, she said, "You look so peaceful." And I said something like, "Yeah, because I chant Hare Krishna or something." But at that point I realized that, like what you're saying, that people will notice, people will sometimes notice that we're not like everyone else. So that's good. I like it when they notice that. So if your motive is to help people, yes, wonderful. That's all motive. It's all back. It's all around. It's all about motive. Why do you do it? And just don't attract too many young girls. Then you can get in trouble. But a handsome guy like you, you're going to have trouble anyway. So. Never underestimate the power of Maya. Be careful. Did I tell the story about the movie? I was stuck in Delhi with my family. We couldn't get a train to Mayapur because it was December and there were no trains. Day after day, we're in Delhi trying to get a train, you know, find a seat. Somebody cancel a seat. So my daughter, she's like 8, she's going crazy, bored. What to do with her, you know, in Delhi? You know. I mean, you can only shop so much, right? What do you do in Delhi? You know? Not a nice place to hang out. My wife says, well, okay, we'll take you to a movie. So I said, okay, I'll walk with you to the movie theater and then you can watch the movie and then I'll come and pick you up. So we get to the movie theater and there's no seats available. It's a premiere of one of the biggest hit movies in India called The Three Idiots. That's the name of it. It's a great movie. Three Idiots. Have you seen it? Maybe you saw it on the airplane. Sometimes I tell devotees, in this movie, and they're like, does Mahatma go to movies? They're all in the airplanes, you know. Even if you're not watching them, the person next to you is watching them. So they couldn't get any seats. It was sold out. So we're thinking, what to do now? And while we were thinking, they just got a cancellation. So they said, well, we got a cancellation. And he said, they said, well, there's two of us. And he said, well, it was 4-ticket cancellation. You have to buy all 4 tickets. So they said, well, Mahatma, why don't you just come in? I go, well, I'll come in for a few minutes, check out the Indian movie. You know. So I call the devotee I'm staying with. And I tell him, I'm just going in for a few minutes. And he goes, don't underestimate the power of Maya. I stayed for the whole movie. It's a good movie. So yes. But I discovered a very good thing to do on airplanes is you get the shades, just put them over your eyes. Wow, it's the best thing I've ever done. So if I don't do that, I'm just distracted, trying to chant, I'm totally distracted. Everybody's watching movies. And, you know, you end up watching them, you know. Not the whole thing, but between every bead, I get a scene. You know. I was in one airplane, and the person next to me is doing this movie. And it was so funny, because the whole theme of the movie, I couldn't hear it, the whole theme of the movie was like a Radha Krishna Leela. Because it was a story about, I mean, Indian movies are so funny, they're all reenactments of, like, it's in the, by osmosis, they do Krishna Leela. It's a story about a man was attracted to a woman that he talked to on the telephone. And he wants to go see her and meet her and marry her. And there's another woman, and the woman he talked to, I'm not sure exactly how it goes, but he thinks it's another woman than it actually is. And he has a friend, and or another woman that he knows, and that's actually the woman, but he doesn't know it's her. And he's trying to get in touch with the other woman, and she's coaching him how to get in touch with the other woman. So she's there, but she can't have him, and he's going, it's a total Radha Krishna pastime. You know, just to create flavor, and you know, so that's what Krishna does. He makes all these obstacles in there. The woman's there, but she can't have the relationship because he thinks it's the other woman. It's so funny. And that's what Krishna does. He makes it difficult to get together with Radharani. So when they get together, it's climatic. Right? That's how it works. Did you know that? It's always difficult for Radha and Krishna to get together. What if Radha and Krishna grew up they got married, and they lived happily ever after. It would make a great Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto, would it? And they took care of the kids, and they washed the plates, and they washed the clothes. You know? But they didn't get married, and they were always having trouble getting together. That makes a great 10th canto, doesn't it? It's exciting. Right? That's how Krishna works. Okay. Anything else? I don't know how we got on that topic. Yes?
Sometimes I find that I can be aware of my anatta or something, but still it perpetuates. You know, the awareness is not necessarily
the solution.
I can change my habits or my behaviors. So how do you become detached?
He's saying awareness doesn't necessarily mean it's going to solve the problem. The anartha is still there. How do you become detached? The way I look at it is this. I want Krishna consciousness, and there's something getting in the way. So how much energy am I going to give to it? How much attention am I going to give to it? Okay, it's there. It's bothering me. But what am I going to do about it? You know, maybe the anartha is that you have a tendency to fault find. And you understand through your intelligence, through the understanding of scripture, this could be extremely detrimental to my devotional service. It's a huge problem. So an intelligent devotee thinks, okay, I have this tendency, but this tendency could be extremely destructive if I don't deal with it. So I'm going to deal with it. I'm not going to allow this tendency to force me to speak ill of other devotees. So I have the propensity. It's there. I feel it. I always feel like saying something nasty. You know that feeling? Any of you have that feeling? Say something sarcastic. Yeah. 5 minutes before you say, okay, I'm going to say only nice things about devotees. And then 5 minutes later you say something sarcastic. So you realize it's the tendency, it's there. But you do something about it. You say, I'm not going to allow this to control me. So it's kind of an alignment in your own heart and consciousness. That I want to align my words with my goals. I want to align my actions with my goals. So it's a conscious effort. So the anartha can be there, the tendency can be there, but don't think you necessarily have to act on it. That's where we make the mistake. We think because it's there, because it's pushing me, I have to act on it. You don't. If we think we do, we're in trouble. But that's when you identify with the anartha, then you think you have to act on it. This is me, this fault-finding propensity, that's who I am, that's what I do, that's how I operate. So you just continue doing it. You don't even realize you could stop doing it. You could detach yourself, you could take another position. Right? You ever had that experience? You identify, that's you, that's how I operate, that's who I am. I'm a fault-finder, I'm sarcastic. So the challenge for all of us is that it's there, but what are we going to do about it? How are you going to allow it to affect you? Okay, it's there. But you want to get alignment in your life, and that's going to put you out of alignment. I was joking with the devotees yesterday on Saturday. I was saying, oh, I could be Krishna conscious, but the girls in Israel are too beautiful. So now I can't be Krishna conscious. And you might think, well, that's stupid. Yeah, it is stupid. But somebody could believe that. That's too difficult. They're too pretty. They dress to it loosely. I can't do it. I could be Krishna conscious, but I'm too lazy. Okay, so by nature you may be lazy. What are you going to do about it? You may be attracted to women. What are you going to do about it? It's not, that doesn't help you become Krishna conscious. So you have to do something about it, right? The nature's there, the tendency's there, but you do something about it. Where we fail is we come to this point where we think, I can't do anything about it. It's just the way it is. And you give into it. Now, very important point. Is everyone still awake?
Yes.
Turn to the person next to you and say, I'm still awake. There are many devotees in our movement who are very advanced. You can see that they have a strong attraction for Krishna. You can see that. Right? I'm sure you've seen. If you've been to India, you've probably met many senior devotees. Not necessarily sannyasis, but many. They have a deep attraction for Krishna. You can see it by being with them. They like to chant, they like to read, they like to associate. They're always talking about Krishna. It's a genuine attraction. When those devotees were young devotees, do you think they had the same anarthas, difficulties, obstacles you have? Or do you think they just took birth and they didn't have any and they just shot up in Krishna consciousness like a rocket? What do you think? How many think they had the same, went through the same troubles you are?
It depends. Prabhupada said that was born a pure devotee.
Yeah, someone. What, one person? Yeah. So that leaves the rest of us. So my point is that we should never think that our particular problems, obstacles, and anarthas are uniquely special or uniquely difficult. But we should understand that those advanced devotees that you saw, they all had to deal with these problems also in becoming Krishna conscious. So the success that they had was the success of their ability to deal with them. Their obstacles may have been even more difficult or greater than yours, but they dealt with them. It's very important to understand this. Devotees often have a belief that their problems are uniquely difficult, that nobody else has such unique and difficult problems. Prabhu, you don't understand how bad my mind is. My mind is really heavy. Has a devotee ever told you that? You go around the world, you hear that from like 500,000 devotees. Prabhu, my mind is really heavy. Prabhu, you don't know how fallen I am. Yes, I do. I know how fallen I am. And if you're anywhere near me, I know how fallen you are. You know, it's not a unique situation. But what distinguishes someone who's making advancement or not is they're dealing with it. They're not giving into it. They're not saying, well, this is how I am, so what can I do? They're dealing with it in a way that they can work through it and become Krishna conscious, not in a way that they give into it. What's the use? This is how I am. Why try? I once read this thing, this statement, really nice statement, said, the only person who fails is the one who gives up. Isn't that nice? And it's true. So I've been telling devotees recently, just stick it out, no matter how bad it is. When you become an old man and a woman, all your problems will go away. Your body won't have any energy to enjoy Maya. You'll just give up. Don't worry. That day will come. You'll actually, at some point in your life, get a real taste for chanting and become detached. It'll happen. You just gotta hang in there for the long run. When you get to the end, you'll get Krishna. Don't jump ship yet. Hang in there. Learn how to deal with your obstacles, your anarthas, your challenges. Don't ever think what you're dealing with, no one else is dealing with. It's not true. It is not true. I have the same thought. I bet nobody has the problem the way I have it. And then other devotees would tell me their problems, like, oh my God, he's got it worse than I do. I actually thought nobody would really be worse than this, and he would tell me his problem. One devotee told me, he said, Prabhu, I had a dream. I was on the altar, and I said, well, you're dressing the deities. He goes, no, I moved Krishna out and stood in his place. I was going, whew, I thought I was bad, but I'm not that bad. So it gets pretty bad out there. So don't think you're that bad. It's a very important point. Don't think you're uniquely, your problems are unique. Your challenges are unique. Your attractions are unique. They're not. Everybody's dealing with them. But some are just dealing better than others. Some are giving in, some are becoming discouraged. So my philosophy is, you see these obstacles, okay, they're there, you realize they're there, deal with them, and move on. Okay, all the Israeli women are attractive, so what? What does it matter? I'm going back to Godhead. Like that, you know? Okay, you know? So what am I going to do about it? You know, cry? Put blinders on my eyes when I go outside? You know, you deal with it. You know, the women wanted to chant in the temple with the men in New York, and all the men were complaining. And Prabhupada said, if you don't like it, go on top of a mountain. There won't be any women up there. And it's like, deal with it. You know, get real. Right? So Prabhupada wasn't like that. You know, go to the top of a mountain, you won't see women. He went, no, he said, just deal with it. So we should stop, right? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Don't worry about those anarthas. Just ignore them. They won't do anything to you if you don't allow them to. Don't give them any energy. Don't fuel them. Don't fan them. Don't feed them. They'll die a natural death. Guaranteed. Hare Krishna.